Okay, let's start. It's week four. Before I start, don't forget, next week we're having a special one with the author of that book, Life, Letters for Life, with a coffee. So come a bit early to get your coffee, and hopefully you'll enjoy. If I sound a bit jet-lagged today, I am. Not because I've traveled anywhere. But the Shavuot schedule is a little bit unsettling, put it that way. Anyway, it was good, but it was great. We had a fantastic 2 days. Okay, so last time we talked about we talked about the four things that Viktor Frankl says is important to enhance and necessary to live a life of meaning. We talked about faith, indoctrination, potential, and eternity of meaning and deed. So the faith concept was the idea of having unconditional faith, which is a surrender to what's higher than understanding and rationale, knowing that we just don't know. And he says that his experience was that there were people who actually faith became stronger during times of challenge, which is the concept I said before about Shavuot, that God gave us the crown, the two crowns, for Na'aseh v'Nishma, the crown being a symbol of something which is higher than the head, higher than understanding. Then you talk about indoctrination, which is being careful about messaging, social norms, social pressure, and so on. Potential is a really good one, understanding people's potential and pushing them with their potential. The beautiful quote, he said, if we take man as he is, we make him worse. If we take him as he should be, we help him become what he could be. And then the eternity of the idea that emptiness is not eternal, but when we do something, it's eternal. So anytime we live with meaning, that act of meaning, or that living with meaning, those values of meaning, and the application of them in a behavioral sense, are once it's done, it can never be taken away, and it's there eternally. Okay. Before we go to today's topic, I just want to, in that interview that I was using the last couple of weeks, I just want to mention one more thing from it. I didn't realize, we spoke about this once when we talked about the works of Tal ben Shachar, and he talked about not pursuing happiness, right? And it was just funny, because I mentioned then about the American, whatever you call it, the Declaration of Independence, having pursuit of happiness as a goal, right? And questioned it, that maybe it's not such a good thing. You have to do things that are meaningful, not pursue meaning, not pursue happiness. And interesting, I found that in the interview of Viktor Frankl, he says exactly that. He says, forgive my contradicting the American Declaration of Independence, which you find the phrase pursuit of happiness. I deem that pursuit of happiness is a contradiction in terms, because happiness can never be really pursued. Happiness must ensue. Happiness is a side effect. Happiness is a byproduct. It must remain a byproduct of meaning, fulfillment of your dedication to a task, a cause greater than yourself, or a person other than yourself. So that's he says it very clearly. Okay. So today's topic is something connected with freedom, with the meaning, as we'll soon see. The concept of, he has stuff he's written on it, stuff he said about it. The idea of freedom and responsibility. We'll talk about what freedom means, what responsibility means, but the point of this is, as Viktor Frankl explains, that freedom and responsibility is so connected to a life of meaning. In fact, it is necessary to have it, to have real freedom and real responsibility, in order to live a life of meaning. So there's one concept I just got from the book that I was working with, where it's a lecture that he gave, and I'm going to mention one point, but then I'm going to go to a fascinating lecture that Viktor Frankl gave. I was searching around and I found that it's called a motivational lecture on responsibility and freedom. It's considered one of his best lectures, apparently, and it's absolutely beautiful. Maybe I'll post a link somewhere so, because you can listen to it. I think if you listen to it yourself, you'll see how beautiful it is. Just the wording, the phrases, and the concept are just amazing. Sorry? Yeah, I'll post it on the broadcast. So it's called, just search for Viktor Frankl Freedom and Responsibility, you'll probably find it, but I'll post a link, please God, on the broadcast. But before that, he makes an interesting point. He says, and it's really an important idea because it's so relevant nowadays, all the things that he was complaining about in his society, as I mentioned the first time, are now come back, but just on steroids. And are so relevant. And he says that the beginning of our modern era brought with it the birth of the natural sciences and their application, technology. And he says the 19th century, we matured, we now have to accept the legacy of that century. The mature natural sciences led to naturalism, and that technology led to a utilitarian attitude, right? And he says, if a human being understands himself as only a creature of nature, in accordance with a naturalistic attitude, and understands the world only as a mere means to an end in accordance with the technology sort of service attitude that we have for us, this is how he subjugates the world to himself through technology. However, at the same time, while he subjects, in other words, throws under the world to himself, he himself becomes an object, i.e. is thrown up against the world. So we arrive at the paradox that when a human being is naturalized, he becomes denatured, i.e. when seeing himself as a pure creature of nature, he does not see his own true nature, his true being, right? And this is his concept about that we're not just a victim of random circumstance, but we have to take control. We're not just conditioned. We don't believe in determinism, in other words. We actually have a choice, and we have a sense of responsibility. Okay, so then, I'm going to quote for you just different parts of this lecture and then break them down and talk about it a little bit, because his words are beautiful. Again, you listen to it. I actually managed to find a transcript of it, so I kind of copied it up. He says the following. He says, there comes a moment in every life when pain strikes without warning. When we are blindsided by loss, injustice, or betrayal. And in those moments we feel powerless, wounded, broken. It is easy to believe that we are nothing more than victims of fate, caught in a story we did not write. Okay, so that's the natural response of the person. But what if that is not the whole truth? What if even in the darkest hour we hold a quiet, hidden power not to erase what has been done? What if responsibility is the very thing that lifts us from the ruins of suffering and turns our wounds into something more than sorrow, right? So this is really the sort of the basis of what he discusses. Obviously, as I always say, we never pray for tests. We pray not to be tested. We don't pray for suffering. But we always have challenges. We always have things that are very easy to fall into just thinking, well, why did that happen to me? And kind of just a victim of that circumstance and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, we have the power, the human being has the power, to lift him or herself out of that victim circumstance, out of the victim perspective, and to turn the suffering more, and as he says, turn our wounds into something more than sorrow, right? Which of course is difficult. This is the problem. It's difficult. See, to live a life, as we talked about last week, to use his quote, to live a life for power and pleasure is much easier, because that's our default. Our default consciousness is our animal soul. I'm talking about from the Jewish perspective. Our default consciousness is just that pursuit of selfishness, pursuit of self-preservation, pleasure, hence pleasure, power, things that work for us in the moment. To lift ourselves up from ourselves, in other words, to lift ourselves beyond ourselves, takes work. There's an old Yiddish saying, you know, people say, "Shver tzan ayid." Right, which is not really a good saying, actually. It's not a good saying, it's a little bit negative. I don't know if I ever told you, it was a real good parenting story that I once heard from a guy that was here many, many years ago. His name was Professor Fried or something. Or Fried, a big educator. And he told a story that, you know, in Antwerp, till today, in Antwerp, Yiddish is a very, very spoken language throughout the city, throughout the Jewish community. So there was a kindergarten that they did what they did every week, what they do in all kindergartens, we should have like a Shabbos party on a Friday morning. And a Shabbos party normally has a Shabbos Ima and a Shabbos Abba and a family and that kind of thing, right? So one week they had the Shabbos party. They chose one boy to be the Shabbos Tati or the Shabbos father, whatever. And as they do normally, most kindergartens, they give the Shabbos father, the one who's chosen that week, to lead the Shabbos table, so to speak. You know, the Shabbos, the little girl lights candles, and then the boy gets a cup of grape juice, and then they make Briya Gafen, kind of a kiddush. And this kid, he was supposed to be the Shabbos father, and they give him this cup of grape juice, and before he takes it, he lets out a very big krech, so he says, ah, sigiven ha-shverevach, it was a hard week, so shver to zayin ha-yid. That's what his tati did every week. Yeah, yeah, it's an amazing thing. It's the only community left like that in the world, yes. I think. Wow. They have communities in Brooklyn that do that, but it belongs to one particular sect, like the Satma in Williamsburg, only speak Yiddish, the Visionists, whatever. But it's interesting to see a whole community, like Yiddish is so rampant, it's very interesting. So, on one hand, it's like a negative thing, because his point was, when he gave the lecture, that you have to be careful what you say. Like, if your message to children is that, you know, to be Jewish and to be engaged in Jewishness is a hard thing, that's the message they get. And in fact, it's interesting that in the laws of Pesach, funnily enough, it's a very fascinating halakha. In the laws of Pesach, there's a paragraph which writes that a person should not say, Kama kasher Pesach alai. A person should not say how difficult Pesach is. We always complain, we get stressed. It's not a good thing to say because, you know, we should make Yiddishkeit engaging, fun, enjoyable. We should see it as a privilege, and so on and so forth. However, having said all of that, the phrase Shvertes Ani, it has some truth to it. Because who says it was supposed to be easy? Right? A life of meaning is difficult. It's just the way it is. A life of deep meaning needs effort, needs work. Why? Because it's about taking ourselves beyond ourselves. It's about what he calls moving outward, moving out of ourselves, and that's always difficult. Going out of our personal Egypt, going out of our personal Mitzrayim is not an easy thing to do. It brings meaning, it brings contentment, it brings happiness at the end of the day, but happiness is not a contradiction to pain or effort, right? So even if we don't have challenge or tragedy or pain, but we still have to work hard. It's Shvert Zaniyid in a positive sense. In other words, it is difficult to go out of ourselves and to work hard. And that's part of the responsibility that we need to assume upon us. If we want to live a life of meaning, it means assuming responsibility, right? Then he continues, he says, responsibility precedes meaning. Because it is through the acceptance of the responsibility that meaning begins to take form. A person can search endlessly for purpose, reading books, chasing experiences, pursuing goals, but until they confront what they are willing to be responsible for, that search will remain abstract and incomplete. So, what does that mean? And what does he mean to confront the experiences and so on? So, the opposite of blaming other people, the opposite of just being a victim to circumstance, is owning our story. What does it mean to take responsibility? What does it actually mean, right? In the Jewish sense, take responsibility doesn't only mean to take responsibility when you made a mistake, or to take responsibility for messing up, or for insulting someone, or for doing something wrong, and then going in a process of fixing it, right? Taking responsibility means that whatever happens to us becomes our story, and we have to own that story, right? Even, and I know we've talked about this before, and this is a very deep theological dilemma, even if it means that someone else made a choice, a wrong choice, where it's very easy to blame that person for what happened to me, but actually, from a Jewish perspective, in a very deep way, it's not that way. Let me just explain, just to refresh our memory. In fact, it just came up the other night, we had a four-hour program on First Night Shavuot, and the last hour was very beautiful. We had a whole bunch of young people talk about working on themselves, working on character. And then I sort of ended it off. And we were talking about, people were talking about patience and people about working on their character, personal growth. And some talked about getting impatient or angry. So I asked him a question. I said, from a Jewish perspective, right? If you walk in the street and you trip on a branch and you hurt your knee, right? So it's not such a leap of faith to understand that it's hashgacha pratit. What happened was meant to happen, and okay, we'd have to just deal with it and whatever, take a lesson from it, whatever the case is, okay? Because as the Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us, hakol bidei shamayim, everything's in the hands of heaven. And everyone agreed right away. Yeah, nodded the head, we're good. Understood, and that's foundation of our belief. Everything happens for a reason. We don't always know the reason. It's God's plan, whatever the case is. I said, okay, now let's take it a step further. Someone hits you. Someone, I don't know, punches you. Someone breaks into your house and steals from you. Someone insults you. Do you have the same perspective? It was just meant to happen. It's Shulchan Aruch, right? So there became a whole discussion. Not so simple. Because we also know that everything, we have a choice, everything is from heaven, but the Talmud also tells us, except for fear of heaven. Because as well, as much as it's a foundation of Judaism to believe that everything is Shulchan Aruch, it's also a foundation of Judaism that we have free choice. Free choice means moral choices, right? So we don't, as the Talmud says, everything is in the hands of heaven except for fear of heaven, which means that we can't control what happens to us, but we can control our response. So therefore, if I don't have a choice what the weather's going to look like, I don't have a choice what people are going to say to me, I don't have a choice if I fall down or I trip or I don't trip, but I do have a choice how I respond to it, right? I respond, my moral choices, if I'm a good person, a bad person, if I get angry or not, if I steal or don't steal, if I do a mitzvah or don't do a mitzvah, that's my choice, and that's a real choice. Whatever, there's been a lot of theology written in it, starting from the Rambam, how that works with God knowing the future. And that's not relevant. What's relevant is that it's a nice thing to explore how we reconcile everything. But the fact is that we have a choice. So now, when something happens to me, but it happens to me as a result of someone else's bad moral choice for which they are responsible and accountable, so then judges say it was meant to happen to me? Or just that guy's bad choice? Right? And here's where a very complicated but deep, as I say, theological perspective arises, in particularly in Hasidic teachings and Kabbalistic teachings, that the two things can be true at the same time. If something happens to me, it was meant to happen to me, and if it wasn't that person's choice, it would have happened to me a different way. That doesn't mean I don't do anything about it. So for example, if someone breaks into my house, so of course I report him to the police because I have to, my moral choice, my moral responsibility is to make sure it doesn't happen to other people. I check my security system to make sure it's working well. Or I check my mezuzahs to make sure they're kosher. Because that's my moral responsible way of living. But I don't get flustered and angry and anxious why I was broken into, because I accept that was meant to happen. Even if it was a result of someone else's bad choice. That person is responsible. That person has to reckon between him and God. But as far as I'm concerned, it was meant to happen to me. I'm going to try and I have to protect myself going further. It's not just surrendering and let things happen to me, because part of responsible moral living is to protect yourself, but to live in a responsible way. So that's fine going forward. But for when it happened, it's something that was meant to happen to me, right? And that's what real responsibility means. By the way, we learned this, we've mentioned this so many times, but we learned this from the Chumash. Joseph's effective. I mean, he was sold by his brothers who made the bad choice, for which they were accountable, for which the Jews were punished in later generations, for which the commentaries tell us that the 10 martyrs that died during under Roman rule was actually an atonement for the 10 brothers who sold Yosef into slavery. So they did the wrong thing and they were certainly responsible for it. But for Yosef himself, when he broke the news that he was in fact Joseph, and he saw that his brothers were suddenly very scared, because he was in the upper hand, he was the viceroy of Egypt at the time, and he could have taken revenge on them, and he could have really given it to them and held them responsible, he said to them in the most amazing verse, he said to them, "Ve'ata al tira'u, now do not be afraid, because you didn't send me to Egypt." Now they did. They sold him into slavery, right? "You didn't send me into Egypt. God sent me here for a mission. God sent me here because he wanted me to be able to provide food and sustenance in the years of famine," as the story took place. So he was, in an unbelievable way, was able to right away come to terms with the fact that he was supposed to be in Egypt. If I landed up in Egypt, I was supposed to be there. The fact that I landed up here because you made a bad choice and sold me to slavery, that's your problem, not mine. So why am I saying this? Because this goes to the heart of responsibility. Responsibility means not just not being a victim in terms of not doing anything about it, not being positive and being not being resilient, but responsibility means what am I going to do with this story? It's my story. And I'm responsible for it in a sense, I've got to do something with it. If I have that perspective, I'm able then to come to the concept of meaning. He says, meaning is not something that floats freely. This is what Viktor Frankl says in the lecture. Meaning is not something that floats freely, waiting to be found like a treasure. It is something that is forged through the decisions we make to shoulder what is difficult to carry, what is ours, and sometimes even what is not ours, but still needs to be carried. Right? That's real responsibility. When we shoulder things that need to be carried, they might not even be our things, but we take them on because it's now become our load, and we take them on and we shoulder them in order to give it meaning. And then he says a beautiful line, he says, which I'll link to a story that I'll tell you in a second, at the core of the human experience is the question not of what we can take from life, but what life demands from us. This is the turning point. This is the turning point, right? There's a story of the first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, who had some very, very great Chassidim and followers, and they would come to him once in a while, and they would have a private audience, and they would ask for a blessing. And there was different types of blessings that people would ask for. This is a tradition throughout the Hasidic world. Sometimes the blessing would be either blessing or advice in terms of serving God, like how to become a better person, how to do mitzvot better, and so on, learn better. And sometimes it was material blessings, blessings for success, blessings for sustenance, blessings for shidduchim, for health, whatever the case is. And there was one particular chassid who came into the Alter Rebbe's room, and he was more was expected from him, and he had come with a long shopping list. Right? And he says to the Alter Rebbe, he says, I need parnasa, I need this, I need that, I need this, right? And the Alter Rebbe felt that he's missing the point a little bit. And he said to him, I'll say it in Yiddish, but I'll translate. He says like this. Alter Rebbe looked at him with very penetrating eyes, that's the way the story goes. And the first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, had a custom that often when he would respond in private audiences, he would say what he wanted to say with a nigun, like a song. It was like very, you know. I won't sing it, but he said to him, he said, Du zogst als was du darfst, aber du zogst nicht zu lieb was darf man dir. He says, you're saying all what you need, but you haven't addressed at all what you are needed for. And the person fainted on the spot. Yeah, it was very, very penetrating. He took it so to heart. He was actually a very devout person. He came too very quickly, but that's kind of effect that the Alter Rebbe had on him. And obviously he learned his lesson, right? And that's what responsibility means. He says, responsibility calls us into relationship with life. It connects us to something outside of ourselves. That's the point. That's going back to the whole thing of meaning. In other words, responsibility means I own the story. If I become a victim, then it's all about me. Why did this happen to me? Why was this person did it to me? Blaming, victimhood, and so on. But if I understand the world, and there's no meaning that comes from it, because what that means is, being a victim means I remain locked in myself, right? Taking responsibility means that it's mine to carry, and I'm going to do something with it, and it connects me, therefore, to something higher than me. This happened to me, but it's not about what happened to me, it's about what I can do with it outside of me, right? He continues, as long as we live only for our own desires and purpose, our purpose remains fragile, easily shattered by disappointment or change. But the moment we take responsibility, right, whether for a child, a cause, a promise, a community, or even a personal vow, we begin to bind ourselves to something deeper than comfort, that bond, that meaning. Responsibility clarifies what truly matters. It strips away the unnecessary and reveals the essential. Beautiful stuff, right? You know, it's interesting. When a person passes away, God forbid, if someone loses a loved one, right? One of the first things that people do is say Kaddish. Even when it's very raw, at the grave, at the funeral, right? And it's a very, very powerful message that, because in a way, the declaration of Kaddish is actually exactly this point. don't know if you know this, but Kaddish people think it's for the person that passed away, and it is, it's for their benefit, but it's actually nothing about death, and it's nothing about the person that passed away. It's a declaration of faith, that's what it is. Yitkadal v'yitkadash, about may God's name be glorified, may his name become known in the world, and so on and so forth, right? Ultimately, Mashiach should come. That's what Kaddish is. And it's an incredible thing that although a person has to mourn and a person must sit with their emotions for a while, you can't always right away jump into meaning and giving it, channeling it and giving it meaning and so on, but at least the pledge is there right from the beginning. The commitment is there right from the beginning that this has happened to me, this is very painful, I'm going to go through the process of mourning and grieving and so on, but yitkadal v'yitkadash. In other words, I take responsibility, I'm going to give this purpose. I'm not going to wallow in it, I'm not going to get trapped in it, I'm going to give it, I'm going to channel. Take time maybe, but I'm going to channel. That's what it is. Okay, now, again, I'm just quoting different things and just expanding on them because it's just such a beautiful lecture. He says, when we hold ourselves accountable to an ideal, our actions are no longer random. They become deliberate, right? What does that mean? It means because our actions are deliberate because we now recognize that what happened was not random. Again, so becoming victim to circumstances when you believe things are random, right? That's why faith and munah and ashkacha pratit is so powerful. Because you only become a victim when you think, this wasn't supposed to happen to me, just randomly happened to me. It wasn't part of the plan. You know, why did it happen to me? All that kind of stuff, right? But when you believe that everything that happens is meant to happen, ultimately there's a plan, then we take responsibility for it, we hold on to it, we carry it, and then the way we respond to it is very deliberate. So our actions are not random. Because living with meaning means you can't just randomly act, right? Living with meaning means you have a plan. You have values, you live in according to those values, you plan a life according to those principles, or according to the meaning that you want to pursue, right? And so on. He says, the direction of our lives is no longer dictated by mood, or it is this conviction that begins to give our day structure, our suffering context, the moment of darkness when the world feels senseless and cruel. It is a responsibility that keeps us grounded. We may not understand the reason behind our pain, but if we have committed ourselves to something greater than our own comfort, we endure. And in that endurance, meaning begins to reveal itself, not in grand epiphanies, but in the slow, persistent fulfillment of duty, in the silent act of showing up, right? When it is hard, in the unwavering promise to keep going because someone or something depends on us. So there's a lot in there. What he's saying is, first of all, it doesn't need big things. Meaning isn't about big grand things. Meaning is just about giving whatever the experience we have meaning, right? And then he says that we have this promise because someone or something depends on us, right? It's such a powerful line. And so in line, again, with Jewish perspective, we have this thing, we've mentioned this before, but the Talmud telling us that Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, the person must always say, for me, the world was created. Obviously, not in an egocentric sense, but in a meaning sense. In other words, I was born here for meaning. I was born here for purpose. I was born because my unique contribution means something. I was born because what I do and what I contribute is important. The world almost depends on it. It's not complete. So we just had Shavuot, we got the Torah, right? And the Torah was, as we mentioned last week, I think as well, the Torah was a Torah where God spoke in the singular. He spoke to everyone individually. The Midrash says that when the Jews got the Torah at Mount Sinai, every Jew, every person standing there said, "Imi hadibur medaber." This communication is to me, it's personal. Because God spoke in the second person singular. Right? Elokecha, your God. Because God said, I need you, I want you. I want your contribution. It matters to me. And the world is different with your contribution. That's why we have the word Yisrael, right? We are B'nai Yisrael, yeah? We are called B'nai Yisrael, that's the Jewish people. What's Yisrael? Yisrael is an acronym. It's an acronym for Yesh Shishim Ribu Otiyot LaTorah. That there are 600,000 letters in the Torah scroll. Right? What does that mean? That every, because we know there are 600,000 principal souls, right? Principal neshamot, principal souls in the Jewish people. All our souls are derivatives of those 600,000 foundational souls. And they correspond to like a big Sefer Torah, a big Torah scroll. And what's the law with the Torah scroll? That if one letter is missing, the entire Torah is invalid, right? It's pasul, right? So you can't say, I rely on other people. I depend on other people. Yeah, the world will be a great place. There'll be the great people that do good things, pious things, save the world, do research, I don't know, do kindness, make organizations. It's not for me. I'm not talented. I'm not the way inclined. Every letter is important. Every letter affects all the other letters. And that's why, and that's maybe the meaning of what he says about the, about it's an action that is born out of responsibility. Sorry, not where was I? Yeah. The unwavering promise to keep going because someone or something depends on us. The paradox is, he says, that we often wait for meaning before we act. But in reality, it is action born out of responsibility that births meaning. Again, we just came from Shavuot, right? This is the whole story of the Torah. God says, don't think so much. Obviously, you have to think and you have to learn. But the greatest, I mentioned this last week, the greatest thing that Jewish people did when the Torah was given, that they said, Na'aseh v'nishma. We are yours, we're going to get on with the job. We're going to do, and then we're going to understand. So yes, of course, for sure we don't pursue happiness. But we don't even pursue meaning. Meaning, of course we pursue meaning. We do things that are important. We do things that we know that are important. Important, healthy relationships, spirituality, giving meaning to life, purpose in life, and something higher than ourselves. But it's not, we don't make a, that's his point here. We don't make a whole thesis. We don't spend years deciding what that journey of meaning is going to be, right? We just do. What's the indication that you're doing, that you're on the right path? Just last night, I was with a group of people and we were talking about this, and the idea of meaning came up. And someone asked me, he said, like, so how do we know? Like, how do, you know, different people pursue meaning, but they go on the wrong track and they're not sure. I said, first of all, meaning is not something that you do your whole life. Meaning is each day could be have a different application of meaning. And you just, this is what he's saying. You've got to just take responsibility for whatever life gives you and give it meaning. Give it purpose. Now, what's the, what they call in Hebrew, Evan Abochen, what's the indicator that you're on the right track? If you're doing something beyond yourself, you're normally correct. Right? If you're going out of yourself, you're normally on the right track. If it's hard and you're going out of yourself and you're doing it for others, and you're doing something that is selfless, you're doing something that is hard, normally you're on the right track. Because seeking pleasure and all that, that's easy. It doesn't bring happiness, but it's easy. It's easier. And that's why in Judaism, the concept of commitment or even surrender to doing things even though we're not comfortable with it is such an important foundation. We don't wait till we work it all out. We've got to work it out. We've got to study and all that kind of stuff. But the idea, what they call in Hebrew, Kabbalat Ol, which means just take upon yourself the yoke of heaven and just do what is right and get on with it and do for others and do something good and do something holy and spiritual and godly. Just do. It has such power and it's so important. Okay. Which is connected, of course, and this is his next part of the lecture, connected to the idea of freedom. And it's, you know, so beautiful because normally we learn about freedom in Jewish texts and it's sometimes difficult to understand. But he puts it in such simple words about what the true definition of freedom is, right? Now, before I read to you what he says, again, because we just had Shavuot, right? In Shavuot, God gave us the Ten Commandments. So he communicated on the day of the Shavuot at Mount Sinai, but then he sent Moses down with tablets, right? Two tablets, in which the Ten Commandments were engraved, right? The first one got broken because the Jews served the golden calf, and then ultimately the second set of tablets came, and that's the one that is still around, hidden somewhere together with the Ark. According to most opinions, somewhere deep beneath Temple Mount. Maybe even under the Dome of the Rock, who knows. But no one knows where it is. Right? Exactly. Somewhere under the Holy of Holies, where the Holy of Holies is, exactly, we're not sure. There are different theories and different opinions and so on. But it's there somewhere. When Mashiach comes, it'll be revealed. But, so, when the tablets came down, the Torah tells us that the words of the Ten Commandments were there, Charut al Haluchot. Charut means engraved. It was engraved on the tablet. But interestingly, in the interpretation of the oral Torah, Charut, the word Charut, has another meaning. It comes to the word Cherut, same word, same letters. Cherut means freedom. And that's what the Talmud says, that Eilcha ben Charin is not truly, freely personal as someone who's connected to the Ten Commandments, to the morals, to the values of Torah. What does that mean? As Viktor Frankl puts it, he says, freedom in its purest form is often misunderstood. It is commonly seen as the ability to do whatever we want and whenever we want, free from constraint, free from obligation. And that's often what people in the general world translate, especially today, translate the word freedom is, right? But he says, but such an understanding of freedom is shallow. It speaks only to the external aspect of choice, but not to the internal weight of what those choices mean. True freedom, freedom that leads to a meaningful life, is not the absence of boundaries. That's such an important thing, not the absence of boundaries. Without responsibility, freedom becomes indulgence, drifting even into chaos. It loses direction, its soul. When a person is free in the external sense but refuses to take responsibility for their actions, their choices lose value. Every decision becomes arbitrary. Nothing is anchored in such a state of freedom and does not elevate the person. It diminishes them. Why? Because what is freedom, right? Freedom is not the freedom to do what we want. Freedom is the choice, the freedom to choose what is right. Right? Very different. It's not to do what we want, it's to choose what is right. People who pursue a path of being free, this is the whole thing we have about Yitziat Mitzrayim, the going out of Egypt, right? The going out of Egypt was not free from slavery, it was free to become God's people, which brought a whole lot of responsibility. Right, because it's hard. But that's true freedom. When we don't choose that path of freedom, we choose the freedom in the common sense of freedom, which is just to do whatever I want, that is actually the highest form of slavery. It means that we are completely enslaved to our own devices, to our own instincts, to our own impulses, to our own indulgences, and to our own personality. We're trapped within ourselves. We're imprisoned within ourselves. That's what it essentially means. It's fancy words to say, I want to do whatever I want. I want to be free. Do what I want. In other words, you want to be a slave to yourself. You're not perfect. Your personality is not perfect. We all have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Ha. We have a good inclination and a bad inclination. And sometimes we want to do things that are bad for us. We want to do things that are empty. We want to do things that are ultimately detrimental for our meaningful life, for our spiritual well-being. And freedom is not to just to give in to that. I want to be given to that. I want to sleep all day. Well, that's nice, but that means you're a slave to wanting to sleep all day, right? Essentially. Whatever it is. I'm a slave to indulgence because I want to overeat or I want to overdo or whatever the case is, right? I want to be immoral. I want to be angry. That's my authentic self. That's my true self, right? All the stuff they talk about today. But freedom is not there. Freedom is about the deepest ability within a person, which is the power of choice. Power of choice and the power of responsibility. It's the power to choose that which is beyond ourselves, which comes with constraints, comes with difficulties, comes with boundaries, healthy boundaries, good boundaries. But it's the choice to choose good over evil and the choice to choose meaning over emptiness, right? It's hard. But the application of choice is amazing. The Zohar says an amazing thing. Because this is so deep, and in fact, this is the deepest part of the human being, and it's the deepest foundation of what it means really to be free. The Zohar tells us that if someone pushes themselves just a little bit, every time a person overcomes their temptation, might not be every day, all day, because we're all on a journey, but whenever a person, I mean, I can tell you the Aramaic words, but it's called discafia, to subjugate our animal instincts. Whenever we just do something that's a little bit hard for us in the right direction, we make a choice to help someone, to go out of ourselves, to do a mitzvah, whatever the case is. Whenever we do that, even once, the heavens open up, says the Zohar, with an amazing divine revelation. In other words, we affect the entire existence, both physical and spiritual, because it's such a powerful thing. Because it is the core of what it means to be a person with meaning and purpose. Dafka, specifically to do something that is hard, not to be free to do what we want. To be free to choose to go beyond ourselves, which by definition is always difficult. The choice to grow, which is always difficult because we have to go beyond our ego. Right? Very, very not in line with the common taught stuff today, right? You've got to find your pathway, find your own journey, find your own truth, all that kind of stuff. That means just find yourself, be more trapped in yourself, essentially, right? So he says, we begin to see our freedom not as a license to escape, but as an opportunity to contribute. This lecture is full of unbelievable quotes. It's unbelievable. You have to listen to it. It's like, so beautiful. And he says, and yet this is not an easy path. It is far more tempting to remain in a state of limitless possibility, avoiding commitment, avoiding consequence. But possibility without responsibility is paralyzing. It just means you get stuck in yourself and therefore you don't really have any meaning or any purpose, right? He says, responsibility is what narrows the path, not in a limiting way, but in a clarifying one. It tells us what matters most. It tells us what is worth our time and energy. Even our challenge, even our suffering, responsibility transforms freedom from a question of what I can do to what, from a question from what I can do to what I must do. Right? It focuses to confront our values and decide the kind of person we want to be, not just when life is easy, but even when life is hard. And it's not the freedom to do less, but it's the freedom to do what is right. Right? But Baba Sheva once gave an example when people asked him, someone asked him about freedom, how can you have freedom with constraints? So he said, take a tree for example, right? And a tree is rooted in the ground, and that's how it's growing, and that's how it nourishes life. But imagine the tree wants to become free. So it says, I don't want to be constrained to one place in the field. I want to be able to be wherever I am. And the tree uproots itself, just as an analogy, right? And is now on a table, in a house, whatever the case is, will die. That's how it works, right? Because to be completely alive means you have to be connected to something. You have to be connected to something other than yourself. You have to be connected to a source of life, to a source of purpose. And that's the tree. The tree happens to have it when it's in the ground, connected to its roots, and the roots are nourishing from a source of life and so on. Then he says something very beautiful, and he says, that when you take on responsibility that feels heavy and demanding, he says, but this pursuit of a weightless existence often leads to life without structure, without purpose, without aim. When there's nothing to carry, there's nothing to guide us. It is the very weight we accept, the responsibilities, the commitments, the obligations that shapes the path we walk and the person we become. The power of action, the power of deeds, right? Which is so in line with Jewish thought. We have so many mitzvot. The ultimate Jewish way is full of structure. We are structured by our days. We need to be conscious of when the sun rises and when the sun sets and what day of the week it is and what date of the calendar it is, right? And what we eat and what we don't eat. All these things, they are a burden, of course. Of course they are. But they create that structure, and structure creates purpose, and structure becomes the guide. And what do you do? It becomes a reminder each day of, it's the mindful way of living, it's the purposeful way of living. And it's specifically the action, not just the philosophy. Philosophy is good, you explore, you understand, it's very nice, but the application of it, to actually be bound by actions, to actually be bound by a structured way of life, ultimately brings great meaning, and ultimately is the true freedom, because the freedom that becomes responsibility, and it's the freedom which actually gives the guide and the structure and the meaning and purpose to life, of knowing what to do, becomes the guide and the moral compass of what we're actually able to experience and apply. It says, the burdens we choose to carry out are not just sources of pressure, they are sources of meaning. When we willingly take something upon ourselves, especially something that matters deeply, we are no longer wondering, we are walking towards. Imagine a life where nothing is urgent, where no one depends on you, where nothing truly matters. At first, it may sound like peace, but over time, it reveals itself as emptiness. It is not liberation, it is disorientation. You know, Andrew, we'll just end with this. There's an interesting concept, therefore. We once spoke about this, but it's an interesting concept in Judaism. Why, therefore, being bound to an action is so important, even when it's done without intention. What do I mean by that? So, you know, we have this concept in Judaism, right? This conflict almost between the actions that we do and the intention we have. It's called the mitzvah and the kavanah, right? Kavanah means the intention. So a person can light a Shabbos candles and not even think about it. It could be robotic. A person can say modei ani and not give a lot of thought. A person can do a mitzvah. A person can put on tefillin. A person can make a bracha. Whatever it is, without much thinking. Right. Now that's not a good thing, because kavanah, intention, is very important. Because ultimately that's what inspires us. That's what gives us the sense of purpose, sense of meaning. And in fact, the rabbis tell us that mitzvah below kavanah, if you do a mitzvah without intention, it's like a body without a soul. So, yeah, the body's there, but the soul's not there. So that's a problem, right? Particularly when it comes to something like prayer. And I've been asked this question many, many times. If I get up in the morning, people, you know, we have a commitment to pray every day and so on. So I've been asked the question many times, what do we do? Like, I wake up in the morning, I'm just not there. Like, I'm just going to say the words. It's pretty meaningless and pretty, you know. So the answer is, of course you have to try as much as you can to have intention. But at the end of the day, there's something amazing about just being committed to the structure. So yeah, one day I put on tefillin every day. One day I might put on tefillin and think about it. One day I might not. But I'm still committed to the structure. Because Viktor Frankl is saying over here that if you don't have that structure, if you don't bound by the actions of life, by this program of commitment, then you start to wonder. And you move away from purpose. And then there you drop it all together and you'll never come to intention because you won't do the action eventually. But if you're committed to the structure, that means you're committed to something beyond you. So when people ask me that question about davening, I said, you know, there's something very special about getting up in the morning and not being in the mood and not being there at all and still being committed to utter the words. There's something very special in that. Is that what you should hope for doing every day? No. Davening, prayer is time of connection, time of communication. You should try and be much more intentional about it. But if you have the opportunity one day when you're just not in the mood, do it not being in the mood. And there's something very special about it, something about a commitment. And by the way, the same thing is in human relationships. Right? You know, a spouse doesn't say, you know, I'm only going to do something to my wife when I really, really feel like I love her. You don't always feel the same way. I mean, right? But you have to be committed the same way. And when you're committed the same way, the action brings the intention. Right? The action brings the emotion. So that structure of meaning, the structure of doing things, as he calls it, the structure of creating things, the structure of being committed to something outside yourself. You're not in the mood of helping someone, help them anyways. Obviously, it's nice to help them with intention, but if you do it without intention, it still shows you're committed to something beyond yourself. So the point of this whole idea is, and this is such an important concept, that living a life of meaning is a great ideal, and it's really what it's all about, but it can only really happen when there's a commitment to taking responsibility, owning every story you have, every story that happens to you, and understanding the true meaning of freedom. When you're really free, in other words, because meaning can not only be when things are going well, but when things are not going, I'm not going to live a life of meaning. Meaning is a constant concept. And can only really happen when you're committed to that idea and you take responsibility for everything that happens to you so that you can give it meaning. And it also means being free. Being free means to make choices, to be committed to another person, to another ideal, to another action, to another cause, and to a higher cause in general. And that's why freedom and responsibility is such an important thing. See you next week. Don't forget, next week we have a special session, and then we'll go back to this in 2 weeks' time.